please use these gifts we return to you to grow your kingdom and bless your children. You may be seated. Our Old Testament reading comes from the book of Jeremiah, the second chapter, verses 4 through 13. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord, you descendants of Jacob, all you clans of Israel. This is what the Lord says. What fault did your ancestors find in me that they strayed so far from me? They followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. They did not ask, where is the Lord who brought us up out of Egypt and led us through the barren wilderness, through a land of deserts and ravines, a land of drought and utter darkness, a land where no one travels and no one lives? I brought you into a fertile land to eat its fruit and rich produce, but you came and defiled me and made my inheritance detestable. The priest did not ask, where is the Lord? Those who deal with the law did not know me. The leaders rebelled against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal, following worthless idols. Therefore, I bring charges against you again, declares the Lord. And I will bring charges against your children's children. Cross over to the coast of Cyprus and look. Send to Kedar and observe closely. See if there has ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever changed its gods? Yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, you heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament reading today is from Luke chapter 14, verses 1 and 7 through 14. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. One Sabbath day, Jesus went to eat dinner in the home of a leader of the Pharisees, and the people were watching him closely. When Jesus noticed all who had come to the dinner were trying to sit in the seats of honor near the head of the table, he gave them this advice. When you are invited to a wedding feast, don't sit in the seat of honor. What if someone who is more distinguished than you has also been invited? The host will come and say, give this person your seat. Then you will be embarrassed, and you will have to take whatever seat is left at the foot of the table. Instead, take the lowest place at the foot of the table. Then, when your host sees you, he will come and say, friend, we have a better place for you. Then you will be honored in front of all the other guests. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Then he turned to his host. When you put on a luncheon or a banquet, he said, don't invite your friends, brothers and relatives, and rich neighbors, for they will invite you back, and that will be your only reward. Instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. Then, at the resurrection of the righteous, God will reward you for inviting those who could not repay you. This is the word of the Lord. So a couple years ago, last year maybe, Heather was turning 30. It happens every year. But this was the first time, and so I decided I wanted to throw a big party to celebrate, but I didn't want to tell her about it. So I started planning and talking to people and came up with some sort of pretext to get her out of the house and filled it with a bunch of her friends and people who loved her and cared about her to celebrate her, and she came back in and we all yelled surprise, and it was so much fun to celebrate, to have a party, to gather together as a community and be grateful for what we have been given, right? I love how much of the Bible story relates to parties. It's popping up all over. Like the commands in the Old Testament were like, four times a year, you guys all need to get together and have a party. This is the rules. This is what your religion is supposed to be about. getting together and having parties. We have friends who throw a Christmas party every year, and it is one of my favorite things. They cook for like a week getting ready for it, and there are, you know, like little tiramisu things in cups, and it's amazing. And we all gather together, and we celebrate being connected and with each other. This, of course, is not a new phenomenon, right? Maybe one of the best things we do as human beings is stop our work for a minute and remember to celebrate together. Kids, you guys like celebrating in parties too, right? Every year you get one that's yours, right? A party for you, a birthday party, right? So this is the big question when you have a birthday party coming up is, who do you invite? Do you remember this discussion, like saying, okay, you've got a birthday coming up, Ryan, and we need to invite, you don't actually have a birthday coming up. Grant has a birthday coming up. Yeah. Turning 11. Wow. Big deal. So you probably remember when you were a kid too, right? You've got your birthday. This is your party. You have some input. Your parents aren't making the guest list. You get to some choices with this, right? So who do you invite? What do you think? First on the best friend. Best friend's got to come. Absolutely. Best friend's coming. Who else? You start looking around in your class maybe, right? Better invite the popular kids. Because if the popular kids come, then I'm cool too, right? And we're definitely going to invite the rich kids. Because presents. Yes. After that, it starts getting a little tougher, right? Because there's that one kid who is a little bit annoying and you don't know if you really want to come to your party. That may have been me. Thanks for inviting me anyway. I appreciate it. Now, things, kids, back in Jesus' day were not that different. They had parties. In fact, most of you know this, that at the time, culture very much revolved around table fellowship. Gathering together and sharing a meal was kind of the core of the fabric of society at the time. And just like every kid's birthday party now, the question then arose too, whom shall we invite? Who gets included in these parties? And it was very much, as now, an opportunity for one to try to increase one's standing and status in society. What sorts of advantage? If I'm going to throw a party, who can I invite that will help me out? Let's invite the mayor. Let's invite the bankers. Let's invite the people who can scratch my back. If I'm throwing a party for them, then maybe next time I need something, they'll be able to give something to me. And so this table fellowship often ended up being a time of trying to invite the people who were at least a step or two above the social ladder than you, so you could try to climb a few steps up yourself. And Jesus finds himself, of course, invited over to one of these parties and starts talking as he notices what's happening, right? Which is the jockeying for position, for supremacy. Who is most important? And the seats closest to the head of the table were those who the most important people got to sit in. If, you know, the colonel's been invited, the major'd better sit one step farther down. But if the colonel hasn't, then, you know, maybe the captain could get the chair of greatest honor, right? And everybody's looking around to see how high they can go. And Jesus says this fascinating thing, right? Stop it. You guys are doing this all wrong. And I think this is amazing because Jesus doesn't even condemn wanting to be honored, right? He's using our own desire to be honored, to say, like, the strategy you are using isn't working. Because if you go sit in a high chair, it's going to be really embarrassing for you when somebody more important shows up and you are called out in front of everyone else and said, hey, you, go away, because that person needs to be in your seat. He's like, how much better to do the opposite? To start at the foot of the table and have the host come in and say, Dan, good to see you. Get up here. I haven't seen you. Come sit by me. Isn't this a better strategy? And he says, those of you who exalt yourselves will be humbled, and those of you who humble yourselves will be exalted. I think this is a lesson pop culture in America has learned very profoundly, right? That was sarcasm. No. We live in a world where it is very tempting and, in fact, almost celebrated for people to build their brand, right? Like, my brand is me. And there's all these coaches and consultants talking about how to make a bigger name for yourself. Not to name names, but, you know, putting your name on buildings is kind of the opposite of what Jesus is talking about here. It's not about you. And Jesus is inviting us into this strategy of living life, which is actually something far more effective and profound and useful and connective and will bring much more joy to our lives than living the other way around. In fact, he tells his host this amazing, I mean, in some ways this is a little bit of a rebuke here, right? Turns to his host and says, when you have a party, don't just invite the people who can give something to you. Invite the people who can't give you anything at all, and you are giving to them simply to give to them. And in this way, you are going to be living in an eternal reality. You are going to be honoring your Father in heaven and giving the way He gives. What if we started living our lives this way, with these strategies? When we throw parties, doing it generously, inviting people who may not be able to give back to us. When you have a party, don't invite the people because of what they can do for you. Invite them because you can do something for them. And Jesus says that this is living in an eternal way. Life not about ourselves, boasting, putting our name on stuff, but about living for the people around us. Not about what we can get, but about what we can give. This is about the deep interconnectedness of all of us. I read the quote from Martin Luther King Jr. yesterday that either we learn to live together as brothers and sisters or we will die together as fools. We are all connected and we all belong. And when we start living into this reality, we recognize that everyone deserves a spot at our table. That when we go about throwing a party and we go about building this web of community and interconnectedness that is so vital to all of our lives, instead of trying to make it exclusive, it is one that we should be going out and finding the people who need it most and offering it to them. I think this is mirroring God. This is exactly what the passage in Jeremiah is talking about. God deeply hurting because his people have rejected him as the source of life. This is his complaint, is that I led you out of Egypt. I gave you everything. I brought you into this land where you were provided for, and you didn't want it. You walked away from the incredible generosity I was offering you. So I have two complaints against you. You dug your own cisterns, and they don't even hold water. You're trying to take care of yourselves, your own self, instead of letting me take care of you, and in turn taking that care I'm pouring out on you and sharing that with the people around you. It actually says that that is changing glory for worthlessness. When we try to live in disconnected ways, we are doing precisely that. We are taking the glory God has given us, is that we are all connected, that we all belong. We are here to care for one another. And when you take that and try to turn it into something being about just ourselves, we are taking glory and exchanging it for a worthless way of life, which is actually kind of self-defeating as well. Because the deep truth that Jesus points out here is that the way of living for ourselves doesn't actually work, right? You know the one person who you're not going to invite to your party? The person who's always all about themselves. Even if they are richer, I don't want that person there. Because there's no room for anyone else. I love what science is finding on this lately. First, Desmond Tutu, who I love. I read a quote from him this last week where he said, God doesn't apparently know very much about math. Because you should have less when you give to someone else. But I have found that you almost always have more. Right? This is the way God has created this world. And this is when we fall for some of the short-sightedness of living for ourselves that we miss out on the big picture of the way God has structured our world, is that when we give to others, as we are not left with less. We always end up with more. Generosity is not something that costs us. In the long run, generosity is actually something that gives to us far more than we ever give up. He tells the story of a lady in one of the projects in South Africa, in one of the townships, where life can often be hard and awful. There are hundreds of orphans from HIV, from the violence, from all sorts of things, and people have almost nothing. People starve to death all the time. And in one of these townships, there was a mother who had lost her kids, but she started adopting the orphans. She had nothing. She didn't even have a house. She didn't have the resources to take care of them, but saw these orphan kids on the streets and said, "This isn't right. You come with me." And as she started doing this, of course, people saw what she was doing and started providing for her. Somebody came in and offered to build a dormitory and did. Somebody else came in and said, "You need food to help pay for these orphans you're taking care of," and started coming in and providing food for her. She, who did not have a home, by beginning to include the people around her, ended up with a home for herself. This is not weird. This is the way God has set this place up. This is the deep connectedness of all of us. This is what Jesus is inviting us to step into. The way of love isn't just self-sacrificial. It is actually the most pragmatic and sustainable path for our own lives and survival. This way of generosity that Jesus is calling into isn't just good for those we are giving to. As Jesus points out, it is inherently good for us too. Science is backing this up. Researcher Richard Davidson, he's a teacher at University of Wisconsin who's done a lot of studying on subjective well-being. You know it as happiness. What makes people happy? How can you actually live your life in a way that you enjoy it most? And one of the key factors Richard Davidson has found is that he's found four main pathways in the brain that relate with long-term subjective well-being. And one of those four is generosity. That the more we give of ourselves, the more we see our lives as opportunities to enrich the lives of the people around us, the more our own lives are enriched. Like, the path to joy is not getting more stuff. In fact, let me get her name right. Where is it? Elizabeth Dunn, another researcher, check this out, this is mind-blowing, found that people are actually made much happier by spending money on other people than they are made by spending money on themselves. Stick that one in your pipe and smoke it, right? Whoa! We are made happier by spending money on others than on ourselves? What if we learned this lesson? What if we actually started doing this? What if, as Jesus said, we started throwing parties not because they were for us and for our advantage, but simply to give to the people around us? This would change so much about our communities, so much about our families, so much about our country. What if we welcomed people in not because of what they had to offer us, but simply because we have something to offer them? Maybe we'd be blessed far more than we'd ever imagine if we were doing it not for ourselves, but for someone else. We may not have much. We may be like the woman in the South African slum, but that does not need to stop us from giving generously. Because there are so many ways for us to give. Not just our material resources, but of course giving our kindness, our compassion, giving our attention and presence, giving a listening ear to somebody who is going through a difficult circumstance, giving encouragement and affirmation to the people who cross our path, giving blessing, spiritual affirmation and wishing well for others are incredible and profound gifts that all of us can give of, no matter where we find ourselves, no matter how much money may or may not be in our bank accounts. We are all invited to start throwing parties where everyone is invited. And I think this is the best possible strategy for living our lives, for finding joy. You probably saw the story a few months ago. It was at graduation, and Morehouse had invited an entrepreneur, Robert Smith, who started a venture capital company he was a graduate and been very successful in starting this venture capital company, and they'd invited him to come back as a speaker. He agreed. It's always fun, right? When you can have your graduation speaker be one of the grads who made it good. Look, kids, if you work hard and hustle, you could be like Robert Smith. So he comes to the graduation and starts talking, and towards the end of his speech, he's encouraging the kids to live with generosity. He's encouraging these graduates as they go out in the world to see how they can make a difference in the lives of the people around them. And he says, one of the things I'm going to be doing to help you live a life like that is to pay off all of the student loan debt of every single one of you graduating today. We're setting up a grant. It was $40 million. I mean, this begs so many questions, right? That one graduating class at one university has $40 million of student loan debt. What kind of world have we set up? But that aside, they erupt into cheers. You can imagine, right? Like, yeah! One of the students, there was five different family units, like grandparents, aunts, uncles, who'd all sacrificed and taken out loans and provided money so that this person could graduate from college. And this took care of all of that. The president of the university said there were many of these students who wanted to go out and be teachers, but the pay is so low that they couldn't do it. This donation is allowing them to go out and pay it forward. In fact, that was the end of his speech. He said, what I'm asking each one of you students to do is to go out and pay this gift forward. I am paying off your debt so that you can go out and take care of your community and show it through your actions, words, and deeds. We, of course, have each been given so much more than just having our student loan debt paid off, right? We have a God who has given us life, who has given us family, community, a day. You were given today. Hopefully, we will be given tomorrow. These are priceless gifts that we did nothing to deserve or earn. And we honor our God and we let His love flow through us as we generously pour out of ourselves to the people around us. It is my prayer for myself this week and for you, is that you would be so inspired and filled with God's Spirit, with the incredible bounty of the gifts He is giving you, that you would look for opportunities to pour those out on the people around you. Throw a party. Invite them all. One of the ways we do this as a community is rejoicing with those who rejoice and mourning with those who mourn. We give the gift of our presence with each other in the celebrations, in the tough stuff, in hurting with each other and being grateful with each other. Jan's back here this week. One of our big celebrations. Jan, we are so glad you are with us.